Welcome back to another edition of The Main Event. Today is episode 70, and on the show we have Roger Ewer, who picked up his debut win at NEF 30 last weekend here in Bangor. Also, we have back for a second time UFC Fight Night 114 winner Jordan Rinaldi. So excited to talk to both of these gentlemen.
Yeah, and of course we got on Rinaldi's radar back in the day when he was scheduled to fight Devin Powell, and we were going to talk about him about that fight, and we ultimately did. Unfortunately, he had to pull out to an injury, and then Dracar Close faced off against Devin instead. But we've been following Jordan ever since, and both guys have an extremely bright future after being scheduled to face Devin. And I think Devin still has a pretty bright future in the MMA scene as well. So I'm glad we got that connection, and I'm interested to see what he has to say about his impressive victory and what's forward for him as well.
Yeah, and how good did that work out for Dracar Close too, right?
Yeah,
and
tell me about it.
For Rinaldi, you know, kept him on the shelf. Now Close goes on and picks up that win versus Diakesi. Rinaldi takes some time off, comes back, and has a very impressive victory and finishes his opponent with a Von Flue choke in the first round, and really keeps him, puts him on the radar for the UFC lightweight division.
Yeah, so we'll talk to him about what he sees in store for his future, but I mean, it is extremely bright. It's like a shining star in the UFC lightweight ranks. I'm very pumped to see what he can actually do when he continues to get more bouts in the UFC. And also, talk about winning his first matchup in the UFC, which has got to be something that feels so good for any athlete or any mixed martial artist to get that pinnacle victory in your career at that level.
Oh, yeah. Once you get to the big show and you get your first fight, granted, he's already had a fight and he took on a really tough guy and it went to a decision. But he came back here and got his first official win. So, yeah, it's got to be one of the highlight moments of his life. And we'll talk to him about that. Also, Roger Ewer from NEF 30, you know, and that was his debut fight, the older brother of the new middleweight champ, CJ Ewer, on the show, too. So we'll discuss his reasons of why wanting to take a fight at the age of 43 or 44, I believe. And, obviously he got the job done in, you know, impressive fashion and in front of his home crowd, which had to be very exciting.
I'm sure that's going to be really interesting insight on fighting in front of his home crowd and just hearing the pop in the crowd and the cheering and everything, especially for a debut. I mean, it's got to be second to none. But we've talked about a lot of victories here today, but the UFC, though, why maybe slumbering a slight bit, they had the Mexico City card last weekend, but it's not necessarily the biggest time of year for them. 215 come around the corner, but they announce some huge big-time fights coming up for some of the pay-per-views in the fall. And again, this is what it's on paper right now, Ryan, but UFC 217 may be the greatest UFC event in history in terms of title matches and what's on the line.
It very well could be. And it is a night after NEF 31 in Portland.
Look at
that. So it's Friday, Saturday. Thank God. Okay, I'm just going to say thank you to Matt Peterson and Nick DeSalvo.
For having the foresight.
Seriously, I'm being serious about that because that is good business right there to book on a Friday night down in Portland, because you know everybody's going to want to see George St. Pierre on his first fight back in the octagon in over about four years since he's fought Johnny Hendricks last.
Yep.
You know, that is smart business to do this on a Friday. So that's going to be a fun weekend. I can't wait.
Out of the four bouts scheduled, at least right now, for the UFC 217 from Madison Square Garden, includes that aforementioned matchup you had just talked about there, George St. Pierre finally returning to the octagon, going against middleweight champion Michael Bisping, and one that we're not necessarily keen on the matchup. We don't think it's necessarily the right thing to do for the UFC in concerning GSP's return, but it's a scheduled bout, and it's finally going to happen. So I'm looking forward to that one. But let me just go over the other three matchups, at least on paper, that are scheduled for this event. You're going to get a strawweight championship against two of the former guests on the show, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is an absolute beast, might be the best women's champion I've ever seen in any ranks. She might be the pound-for-pound, much like Mighty Mouse is the pound-for-pound best, other than maybe John Jones in the UFC right now.
I would say obviously her pedigree, historically speaking, with defending the belt and everything, but I think the best woman fighter I've ever seen has to be Cyborg.
Yeah, but still, I want to see her do it a little bit longer continuously.
For sure.
Because Joanna, she's a tactician in a machine too in her own right. She's just weighs 20 pounds lighter.
It's not Cyborg's fault because they haven't been able to find a weight class for her in the UFC until fairly recently.
And I misspoke. 30 pounds lighter. 30 pounds lighter.
Yeah, she's a beast, man.
And she'll be taking on Rose Namajunas, who is really a bright star in this as well. And she got really emotional talking on Ariel Helwani's show I saw recently with Pat Barry, her husband, and talking about going through some of that emotion with Pat's struggles with addiction and everything and still sticking with him. So I love both of those women. They're tremendous fighters, and I think that could have some fireworks. How about the interim lightweight championship, at least tentatively scheduled? Khabib Nurmagomedov taking on Tony Ferguson, which could be an absolute fight of the night, depending on how it goes, because you know Tony wants to go up and just bang away, and Khabib probably wants to get it on the mat too, so that could be interesting. And then finally, one I think is going to be
fight of the night, for sure.
Cody Garbrandt taking on TJ Dillashaw. We're finally going to see that one. There's been some speculation that Cody might not be perfectly healthy by that November part, and maybe it would be better to fight in early December or late December. But if we have all four of those title matches, including Johnny Hendricks returning to the cage at some point during that evening as well, this might be the greatest card ever assembled if, again, it all works out to plan.
A lot of that's going to have to do with how they build this undercard and everything, too, because this last one, UFC 214, top to bottom, that card was so stacked. So, yeah, these title matchups that we're talking about right now are all good and well, and I can't wait to see it. But I want to see them fill the rest of this card off with some phenomenal fights, which hopefully that's what they're planning on doing, because it is in Madison Square Garden towards the end of the year. Yeah. And you know that they want to come back after, you know, this Conor Mayweather stuff that goes on. They want to come back with a huge card to get the spotlight back on the sport of MMA.
If you could only pick one of those fights to watch, which one would it be? Why?
Oh, man. Well, okay, look, I've always said that George St. Pierre has been my favorite mixed martial artist of all time.
Yep.
A lot of that has to do with, I love his professionalism, and he's just an unbelievable role model. I'm just drawn towards the guy, you know? I've always just followed him. I have 5 of his shirts that I've bought when I was a little bit younger. And so I can't wait to see him back in the octagon and see what he's still got. He's still a young guy. I mean, he's my age. You know, he's not out of his prime yet, although 4 years off of competing inside the octagon, you don't know how that's going to affect him. However, we just saw John Jones take quite a bit of time off, not as much as GSP,
right?
But it's like when you competed at that high level for so long, how much rust can there really be to get back into the octagon, because you've done it so much? And George is obviously training and full-on sparring on a regular basis to prepare for this fight in Bisping. So I'm really interested to see that. And when I think about this fight, I think of the Michael Bisping Chael Sonnen fight. I feel like it's going to be somewhat similar. Chael has come out and said that he's trained with George on a number of occasions, and George gets the better of him. George takes him down. He gets top control.
Well,
and
I'd hope so. No offense to Chael, but it's still two different guys.
But also, you know, Chael is bigger than George, and he's fought at higher weight classes. So you got to take that into consideration. So that's saying a lot for a historic middleweight and light heavyweight and Chael Sonnen to say this about a welterweight in George St. Pierre. That says something. So I'm really interested to see how that's going to translate to what Bisping is right now, because Bisping is as good as he's ever been. And this is going to be a really interesting stylistic fight. You know, George wants to get this to the ground and maintain top control and beat him up. Because if this stays on the feet, you know, Bisping's good at chipping away and beating his opponents down. I mean, whoever saw how he won the belt and what he did to Luke Rockhold? I never saw that coming.
The one thing I will say, though, for GSP, his ring rust or his octagon rust is going to be more associated with him not wanting to fight. As opposed to John Jones, he wanted to fight, he just continuously shot himself in the foot, figuratively, not literally, though. I can imagine him doing that here at some point, too. And even with Dom Cruz, like, you remember his long layoff before he ultimately
fought. Yeah, he said there's no such thing as ring rust.
Yeah, and he came out there, and he looked tremendous. While everyone was saying he was going to go out there, he was going to get his... He was going to not maybe get knocked out, but he wasn't going to be able to beat TJ, who was just an absolute monster at the time, and you never thought it was possible. GSP has had the opportunity to go and fight. He's been healthy, relatively speaking. He could have gone out there and had to fight in the last 4 years. He just didn't want to. And you have to respect that decision. But that also weighs on me a little bit. He's one of the greatest of all time. But if you don't want to fight, and now all of a sudden 4 years later, it's tough to have that mentality. Well, I don't care how much you've been training or staying in shape. It's still a whole different ballgame just to get in that head feel.
You know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. Yeah. And George St. Pierre was at the pinnacle of the sport for a very long time, and it's got to be really wearing on you mentally to be pulled in so many different directions when you're an athlete. You get in it and you really just want to compete and go out there and fight and do what you love the most and got into the sport. And George became such a big figure that he was doing all this other stuff, and I feel like that kind of wore him down a little bit.
Right.
And he's always such a nice guy, and he takes his time to be nice to everyone and whatnot, and I just think that it got him to a point where he was like, I need a break from it all, you know. And then all the grinding and grueling of training camps and fights and whatnot, I think he kind of fell in love with, oh wow, my body feels great again.
Right.
This is nice. And it takes a little while, I think, to really get back to that point where, you know, you get that hunger back, because he was beating on everybody, you know. And he, regardless of what anyone wants to say, he never lost the belt. That fight with Hendricks was controversial. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. But it was, he never lost the belt, and he retired on top. So this is going to be interesting, because if he comes back and gets beaten like a drum,
oh, man,
that's not going to be a good look for him. And
would that be the end of his career? Do you think he just decides to walk away, or does he try to continue?
No, I don't think he's going to go out like that. If he does get beat, I think what you're going to see is he's going to be like, okay, middleweight is too big for me. I go back down to welterweight, and I fight someone there.
But do you like his opportunity, his chances against a Tyron Woodley after that? Because, I mean, Tyron's a big 170, too.
He really is, but George does have a little bit of a reach on him. He's a little bit taller. He's a different... Good luck
trying to take Tyron down.
Well, you know, even Dean Thomas, when he had him on, said that George would be his toughest fight to date because of how, you know, just much of a technician he is. The problem with that Woodley fight is, as we saw later on in George's career, he had a propensity to get hit.
Yeah.
You don't want to get hit by Tyron Woodley.
Yeah.
So, that would be really interesting to see. But either way, to me... Look, it's been since 2013, November 15th or 16th, when he fought Hendricks. It's been too long, and I'm just excited to see him back. So to answer your question, we've been talking for a while, that would be the fight that I would like to see the most, just because of my love for GSP. However, that fight between Cody and TJ.
Well, that's my pick, because I know your love for GSP, but for my money, the best fight, at least on paper, is Cody versus TJ, because TJ had a classic against Dom Cruz. He's won ever since losing his belt. He's deserved the title shot. I would have loved to see the Dom Cruz-TJ Dillashaw rematch after that fight card in Boston at the start of the new year back in 2016, I believe. So I'm all on board with this one. It's going to be a phenomenal one. I think if it was either Khabib versus Conor or Tony Ferguson versus Conor, that would overcome this Garbrandt Dillashaw bantamweight championship just because I think the matchup and just the pomp and circumstance would be better. But Khabib and Tony doesn't do a ton for me, comparatively speaking, to No Love versus TJ.
Yeah, you're way too early UFC 217 picks here. Would you go with Cody over TJ, or do you think TJ would get the job done? I'm going to tell you this right now. Watching the last season of The Ultimate Fighter, I'm going to be rooting for TJ. I thought Cody was a dink. I was like, wow, like this guy is, he's got a weight, he's got a big chip on his shoulder. To me, TJ looked like the one that was just, you know, hey, look, I'm just trying to do my thing here and make my way in the sport. You know, I didn't like the way that Cody was coming at him like that. So I'm rooting for TJ.
Here are my four way too early predictions for UFC 217, and I'm sure I'm going to oscillate before that time comes. I'll go GSP beating Bisping. I'm going to go Joanna beating Rose, just because I don't see anyone beating her, at least for another year. I'm going to go TJ over Cody, too. For whatever reason, Cody, I never get a ton of confidence in him. I think he was really jettisoned up because of his look, up the rankings, and because he's had some impressive knockouts, and he leapfrogged guys I think he should have been behind still. For whatever you want to say, he beat Dom Cruz fair and square, but I think he got ascended up way too quickly. And I'm going to go Tony Ferguson over Khabib.
Holy smokes.
Do we disagree?
I'm with you on all four.
Yeah.
on
I
all
love
four.
Tony Ferguson too. Yeah. And I just don't. I think he's going to clip Khabib just enough and have so much damage on him that even if Khabib does get on top of him, grinds him out on the mat, I still think Tony will have enough to score to win.
Yeah, I think El Kukui is unlike anybody that Khabib has ever fought.
Yes.
And I think it's his athleticism that's going to keep him in the fight and allow him to not stay on his back the whole fight and keep it on the feet. And I think that's what's going to give him a very close win. I don't think either guy is going to tap or get finished. I think it'll go to the distance, but I'm going with El Kukui to win that fight. That's interesting. Is that the first time that we've been like
I'm
exact?
Sure we will change a little bit, and I'm sure one of these fights that's scheduled for 217 will eventually go on to 216 or 218 just by nature of the business. But I think it is.
Yeah, that's interesting.
By the way, looking at Ferguson's record here, how Jekyll and Hyde is Michael Johnson?
I know, right?
He beats a guy like Tony Ferguson, but then he goes out there and doesn't look good in other fights, and he looks like a world beater, and then the next fight he just looks like he shouldn't even be fighting in the UFC.
You know what it is? Johnson has so much power that, you know, when he hurts his opponents, he usually puts him away and whatnot, and when he fights someone like the Terminator, like Justin Gaethje, I feel like Johnson's soul was taken a little bit because he threw everything plus the kitchen sink at Gaethje, and Gaethje just kept walking forward like, I'm coming for you. You know what I mean? Like that was just one of those fights where, and we've talked about this before with Gaethje, you know, that's probably going to take years off of his life the way that he fights. And his fighting career, at some point in time, his chin's just going to go. You know what I mean? And he'll have to retire. But, Michael Johnson, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that's funny.
And finally, off the UFC side of things for just a moment, but sort of still talking about it, there is a little bit of a news note 2 weeks out that both Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor are petitioning to get lighter gloves. Does that change your thought process in supporting Conor? Does it give you more confidence to say if the gloves are lighter, more akin to a UFC level, but still it's going to be like, I think 8 ounces is what they're trying to shoot for. Does that give you more hope that Conor might be able to pull the upset now?
I mean, look, Conor's got a big left. That's the shot that's his money shot. And if the gloves are lighter and he can land a clean shot, that gives him more of a chance of a knockout. So yeah, you got to lean towards giving Conor a better chance with the lighter gloves. One thing I do want to mention about that fight is, did you see the video that was leaked? Dana White leaked the training video.
Oh yeah, late last night, right?
Yeah, late last night. I'm gonna tell you this.
Paulie does not look good.
No,
man.
He doesn't, and he lied about being pushed to the ground. That was not a push.
Well,
Conor
did get pushed. He got pushed with his fist.
Yeah, with his fist. Exactly. Conor hit him with a huge overhand left and stunned him, and he was going back a little bit, and as he was backing up, Conor like kind of hit him,
flipped him with the right, and then
pushed him down to the ground. That was a knockdown. That's what that was.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I saw some of it from earlier, and Conor landed some stiff shots, and Malignaggi didn't look like this pro boxer So that just goes to show you, Conor is the real deal. He may be an amateur boxer, but he's a professional fighter, and that's what he needs to make this boxing match into, is a fight.
And if Paulie does want to say release the whole tape, I would say if I'm in Conor's camp, no, why would we release the whole tape?
Yeah.
A, because then Floyd can see what he does and his tendencies and better prepare himself. And he's 49 and freaking old, maybe the best pound-for-pound boxer in history. No way in hell do you do that.
Yeah.
But just releasing that 10-second clip or so is not a good look for the former boxer, now retired. But all things considered, I'm looking forward to this one. I ask one last question before we get into our interviews, though, and maybe we'll ask this to Jordan later on. If this goes the duration, is this a win for Conor McGregor? Because Floyd already says, if this goes the full duration, he feels like Conor McGregor will have won, regardless of the outcome. Do you feel that same way, or does Conor actually need to get that W?
No, I don't think Conor has to get a W to win the fight in the eyes of the public.
Yeah.
I think what he has to do is just keep it relatively competitive. He just can't look completely outclassed and look like a bozo in there. You know, if that happens, then that's a bad look for Conor, and he'll have to succumb to the fact that maybe I did get in over my head. I'm a mixed martial artist, I'm not a boxer. But if he does go the distance and can keep it somewhat competitive, that's a win for him. But I don't think that's what Conor wants. Conor wants to knock him out, and that's what he's going to go for.
For Conor not to be embarrassed, he just has to get through four rounds. If he gets knocked out within three rounds, I think it'll be a little embarrassing for him. If it goes to four, that would be my, that's my borderline where he could still be embarrassed if he lost in four, but if he makes it past four, it's all gravy beyond that. Because he went toe-to-toe with one of the greatest pound-for-pound boxers in the history of the sport, and he was able to last. I don't care whether or not he's a knockout puncher. I don't care whether or not that, whatever you want to say about Floyd. If he gets past four rounds, that's a win for Conor McGregor. Not only that, it's a win for his bank account, regardless of what happens, even if he takes one punch and then eats the mat.
That's true. I'm going to be so ticked if Conor gets knocked out, though. I'll be so upset.
When? Like early on or just in
period,
general?
Just period, if he gets knocked out.
I think you have to set yourself up for that expectation because he's going into a different world.
No, you know, and I agree with the fact that he's going into another world, but, you know, 40-year-old, Floyd Mayweather is definitely not a knockout artist, and Conor does have a great chin. I mean, you saw all the shots he took from Nate Diaz, and he kept walking
forward. But if that was a boxing
forward.
Match, I bet he would have gotten knocked out by Nate.
Yeah, but
at some point.
But you know, a lot of that stuff was like accumulation of fatigue from fighting takedowns and getting off his back and whatnot. So you got to take into consideration that with that Diaz fight, when he ended up getting finished and whatnot, that was the equivalent of being towards the end of a 12-round boxing match because of how much energy he expended, you know, fighting off a world-class athlete in Nate Diaz.
Give me Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, then give me the winner of this Ferguson-Khabib fight versus Conor. Have Conor then fight for 170. Have him fight for that title. And see if he can win it. If he has all three belts without technically losing any of the belts, give him Nate Diaz and he can retire.
God, I don't want him to retire, man. He's not even close to, well,
that's,
he was
that would be
29
three,
years
that
old.
Would be three fights in the UFC and he'd already have more money than he'd ever know what to do with. And his son would know what to do with. And his
selfishly, I do not want to see Conor retire until he's in his mid-30s because he's just TV gold.
But what's the difference between making $70 million at the low end for this boxing match and then maybe making $7 or $10 million for another UFC fight?
Well, he'd be doing it for the love of the sport, for something he loves to do, for his legacy long term.
I don't care how much you love it, though. There's a point where you've got so much money that you want to enjoy the rest of your life.
And I think that depends. That's like a person-to-person thing. There are some guys that they don't get into it for the money. They get into it for the glory, for like the long-term legacy of like, I'm the greatest fighter ever. The money is to some guys, that's what they care about the most. But to others, it's more about how they're going to be remembered. And I think that Conor is somewhere in the middle. I think that he loves his money, but I also think that his legacy and being remembered is one of the greats. That's something that's important to him.
But at least if you got three more fights out of Conor, and those were the three fights, like let's just say it's Khabib versus Conor, and then afterwards,
which is a stylistic nightmare for him.
But he wins that one, so he proves the doubters wrong, much like he did with Mendez. People thought, hey, Mendez is going to out-wrestle him. And then he goes out there and he beats, let's say, Tyron. Let's say Woodley's still the champion, and he beats Woodley, which would be tremendous.
Oh, my God.
It would be like, wow, this is the greatest guy of all time. He could have all three bouts. He's like, I'm the triple champ. The triple champ does whatever the hell he wants to. And then he goes and says, I want Nate one more time. Yeah. I'll fight him at any level. Maybe I'll fight him at 170. I'll give him the title shot or something. Mm-hmm. Not that Nate necessarily deserves it because he hasn't fought since, but just do it anyways. And then win, lose, or draw, that could be his final fight.
You know, if he never fights Nate again, I'd love to see him fight Nick. That would be a lot of fun, too. You know, if
I just
I fight
see
at
Nick
170.
In general. Get him back in USADA testing.
Right?
Find where he is. Stop smoking the ganj, even though it doesn't... I think for the USADA test on the... Out of fight season for him. Yeah. I don't even think they test for marijuana, so I don't know why he would theoretically be avoiding them and vice versa. So let's just get it done.
Yeah. Actually, they do test for marijuana or whatever. I got to watch myself because you can't swear on the show or whatever, but, you know, I think it's a bunch of bull stuff, you know?
I know they test before or right before a fight, but I'm pretty sure when you're not in the lead up to a fight, especially a certain amount of time out, they don't. Because I read a report saying, like, why would he be ducking USADA, because if it's for marijuana, then he has no idea the USADA testing rules and regulations. Just get him back in the system,
right?
Please, so we can have at least the idea of maybe having him fight again here soon. But
so much exciting stuff to talk about as the world of MMA keeps going round and round. We're going to take a break right now and give a shout out to our sponsor, the Sea Dog Brewing Company. We'll be right back with UFC lightweight Jordan Rinaldi. The main event is sponsored by Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located on 26 Front Street on the Penobscot River here in Bangor. You can call them at 947-8009, or you can find them at seadogbrewing.com. A couple of new exciting beers you need to go check out at the Sea Dog. They have a new Sea Dog Pale Ale that is just delicious, and also a Deep Stowage IPA that is very popular and bringing a lot of people down to the Sea Dog to try these new two beers. While you're down there, you might as well check out another exciting event that the Sea Dog is going to be hosting. As always, they are going to have their second annual Sunfish Festival that is Saturday, August 19th from 12 p.m. all the way till 10 p.m. at night. And they have a few exciting acts for you. Hambone is going to be performing from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. DJ MC will be there from 4 to 7, and the Ultra Boys will be coming on at 9:30 p.m. to close out the night. All this is going to be happening at 26 Front Street in Bangor. The Sea Dog is where it's at. Make sure you go check it out. Sea Dog.
I've walked among the shadows. My tears away, and I felt the pain of heartbreak, and I've seen the brighter days.
Back on the show for a second time is a guy who picked up his first official UFC win at UFC Fight Night 114 with a round one submission of Alvaro Herrera. Jordan Rinaldi is back on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, always.
I changed it up a little with that intro music, a little too soft, huh?
Well, hey, we cater to your needs. So sometimes we need those mornings where it's a little bit softer of a transition into the afternoon. So that's good with me.
Of course.
Yeah, and Dean Thomas last week had classical music, so it's
that's
not
true.
Unusual for us to feature this recently. So
very true. Now, Jordan, the last time we had you on the show, you were preparing to take on Devin Powell, but had to pull out due to an injury. How difficult has the last 8 months been for you waiting to get back into the octagon?
It hasn't been too difficult, just a little frustration, but, you know, it's all part of the process, and my career's been a little bit slower, too, so I'm used to the ups and downs of it all and the ebbs and flows. So it's not bad.
Tell us a little bit about the injury that occurred, and I'm curious, what is actually harder for you, the mental side of staying focused long-term after an injury, or the actual physical rehab process?
Well, what happened was I had a nagging hip injury, and it wasn't much of an injury as much as like an overuse thing, so I had a torn labrum in my hip and two cams, one on my femur and one on the acetabulum or the hip joint. So they were basically grinding on each other. So that had been nagging me for a few months prior to when I had to pull out of the fight in January. But I broke a rib in training camp for that Powell fight. So when I broke the rib, you know, you can't really do much for ribs, but I couldn't fight anymore. So I said, let's go ahead and do the hip surgery. So that's what took so long to heal and everything. But the rib was the main thing. The hip is just a nagging thing that had been bothering me for a while. But as far as like recovering and getting back into the process and everything, the physical stuff, the physical and mental, doesn't bother me too much. I've had, I think, 9 or 10 surgeries already, so I'm kind of used to it all. And the mental side, a lot of people struggle trusting their body after having these injuries and everything. But if you look at it as it's your body, it's going to fail at some point. There's going to be problems. You're going to have injuries. You just go 100%, give it all you can, and if that happens, you deal with it then. I mean, that's how I deal with her, how I come back from injuries, and it seems to work well.
And you're clearly feeling back to 100% now, because that performance you put on at UFC Fight Night 114 was truly special, and you finished that fight with a Von Flue choke. How does August 5th measure up in the greatest days of your life with officially picking up your first UFC win?
It's got to be definitely top three, with getting married, getting that phone call for the UFC, and then the win. I mean, there's been a very few events in my life that have matched that first win in the UFC, and it was fantastic.
And so what were the feelings afterwards? You must have just felt like an elation, like in the octagon, getting interviewed, you know, ready to go and hug your wife and see your family. It was just like a really special moment. Like, how can you put it into words?
Absolutely. I mean, it's hard to put it into words, but of course, vindication was one of the first things just for my career, for my team that I train with, the small team in Charlotte, and for all my training partners and coaches. I mean, it's vindication for the hard work that we put in for years and years. And that's the main thing that kind of overcame me is just, you know, hard work is paying off. It's showing. It's something that's on display now for the world to see. And that was probably the most overwhelming one was, hey, I'm a serious fighter. I'm a world-class fighter, and there's no denying it anymore.
Now you gave all glory to God afterwards in the cage with Brian Stann, and you quoted a passage there. You know, how much do you lean on your faith, you know, when you're in training camp and when you have to overcome adversity?
I mean, constantly. I try to be in the Word every single day. Try to read a couple of chapters a day, and it's really important. I mean, 1 Peter 5:7, I think it is, where he says, give all your cares to God, for he cares for you. I mean, that's a passage that I love to think about constantly because, you know, there's so many challenges, struggles, and bad things in this life, but the Lord cares for us, and it's important to give all these anxieties to him. And so I lean on the Word every single day as much as I can and try to not only read it every day, but meditate on it all the time and think about what I read earlier in the day. It's who I am. It's the most important part of me. So, I lean on it constantly.
Yeah, I love that. And I know my father will be listening, and he's really going to like that as well. So you just earned a new fan just on that alone right there. Now, you said, Jordan, prior to this fight that you thought Herrera was the perfect opponent for you. What was your thought process heading into this fight? What was your reasoning for that?
Well, the country of Mexico doesn't have the strongest wrestling pedigree, so I thought that I could control where the fight took place according to how it was going during the fight, and I could make the adjustments necessary, whether I needed to take it to the ground or if I wanted to keep it on the feet, I could decide that. And having an edge in wrestling is such an important thing. So I thought for the fact that I was going to be a much better wrestler than him, that was huge. But as well, I think I am better than him in every single aspect of the game, honestly. Trying not to sound as arrogant or anything, but I just think I'm technically better than him, and the one thing that I had to look out for was his power, and I did that pretty successfully.
Yeah, and it looked like you almost got clipped a little bit before the fight went to the ground and you were able to get on top. Break down how you were able to secure that beautiful Von Flute choke that ended the fight.
Well, what really happened was I was rushing in with that combo, which was way too aggressive on my part. I wasn't being patient enough, and when I threw the uppercut, the uppercut kind of missed, but he threw a hook at the same time, and the hook didn't land on my head. It was more his forearm pulling that went behind my head, and then that kind of pulled me in and kind of tripped me into his face, and I had a huge cut, or not a huge cut, but a huge swelling, really, on my face or on my eyebrow because of my face hitting his cheekbone, and apparently that's what rocked me, just falling full weight into his cheekbone, basically. Once that happened, obviously my legs buckled a little, which is almost normal in my fights. I kind of get flash knocked out maybe once a fight or so, but no big deal. Once I had that single leg, or when he went for that choke, I knew it, for some reason it wasn't that tight, and the single leg was right there. And once you pass with that single leg, even if he does have it that anaconda tight, there's pretty easy ways to get out of it if they don't involve the legs well. So once I was past the guard and everything, I knew I was really safe. And then my old coach Sergio in Las Vegas, he loves the Von Flute choke. And it's just something we practiced a lot at that camp because we had so many wrestlers there and a lot of strikers as well who didn't know how to defend the takedowns as well. So they would leave that guillotine in a little bit too long. And then once I locked the hands up and got his hand caught inside the choke, basically, I knew it was done.
Now, were you told any words of encouragement from Dana or any of the others in the UFC, you know, inner circle, so to speak, after this big win?
No, I haven't heard a word from them. I mean, my biggest thing was I was frustrated that I didn't get the bonus. I mean, you don't see that that finish very often. And, of course, they take into consideration your opponent and everything like that. But I thought getting that choke was clearly a reason to get, you know, a performance bonus. And I was a little bit upset that I didn't, especially compared to the fact that the guy who got the one submission performance bonus did it with a rear naked choke. You know, it's kind of everyday run-of-the-mill chokes. And he didn't even set it up really with jiu-jitsu. He cracked the guy, and that's where it was set up from. So I was just a little frustrated with that and that no one had reached out to me after the win.
Yeah, and if I was in your shoes, I think I'd feel the same way because that was a very, very impressive performance. And again, that was a big win for you, too. You kind of made an exclamation point, so to speak, on the fact that, you know, you're here to stay in the lightweight division. I mean, your last time out was against Abel Trujillo, and that was back in May of 2016. And you lost a unanimous decision against a really tough guy, so you've proven that you can hang right in there with the best of that division. You know, having said that, I'm curious, how do you believe that you stack up with the guys in the top 10 of the lightweights?
Honestly, it's just starting to marinate that I'm one of the better in the world. You know, it's something that you don't think of, or you try not to be that arrogant and say, hey, I'm the best in the world. I don't know. I don't have that same mentality that Connor and them have, but I try to be humble about it, and I think that's the best approach to training as well, so that you're never thinking you're better than anyone else in training and thinking you're so good that you can't learn from anybody. So with that said, I think I stack up really well. I mean, the 55 is the best division in the world, period. And I've said this many times before, it's just the average size of a man. I mean, most people in the world are my size. It's kind of frustrating. And the big guys, they're playing other sports that pay better. And the smaller guys, there's just not that many of. So it's a numbers game, and the 155 division is brutal. I think I don't know. I'm starting to really get the confidence and the belief that, hey, I can start smashing some of these guys, and I can start smashing a lot of them. And I think my jiu-jitsu is better technically than most of them. I think my wrestling is up there with it, but my striking is pretty good as well. But where I'm good at is the gray area where you have to mix and match all of the arts, and that's what I think I'm better than most everybody in the whole division at, is mixing them, deciding when the takedown is ready from my stand-up, deciding when to strike on the ground relative to passing the guard and everything. So I think the gray area is where I really, really have an edge on people in my division.
Now, you mentioned Connor earlier there, and you said confidence and belief, you know, in yourself or where you're getting at right now. Well, confidence and belief is what has gotten Connor to where he's at right now. So having said that, the more confident that you get, the more wins that you get, you know, that really could help propel you to the top of the division, because wouldn't you agree that the mental side of the game and having that, you know, unwavering confidence is a huge part of mixed martial arts?
Absolutely, and you know, it's, and how I explained it might not have been the best way, but it's a double-edged sword, because you, on one side, you need to be confident, you need to be sure of yourself that you can go out there and win fights, but at the same time, you can't be so arrogant that you can't learn well, that training becomes a monotonous grind because you think you're better than everybody. So the humility part is a big factor in training. I love how Damian Maia puts it in the way that he's always learning, and he's one of the best in the world. He travels the world, but he's learning from everybody. It doesn't matter how good they are, how bad they are. He can learn something from them, and I think that's the best way to think about it, having a good balance of confidence and humility so that you can always learn but always be confident when walking into the cage.
Yeah, and you know, with mixed martial arts too, there's so many disciplines that you need to, you know, give equal attention to make sure that you're proficient in every, you know, part of this sport here. And again, to talk about Connor real quick, I got to get your thoughts, because that fight is 2 weeks away now. And he's transitioning over from MMA into boxing to take on what a lot of people feel like is the greatest pound-for-pound boxer of all time. How do you feel he's going to do in this fight? Do you think that his confidence will get him in there and make this competitive, or do you think that he's a little out of his league here?
He's out of his league. I mean, let's be honest. Conor is a fast twitch guy and fast and great reaction times, good timing and everything like that. But Floyd's one of the best ever. He's not the best ever, but he's one of the best ever. One of the best defensive guys ever. And even though he's 40 years old or so now, he's fast as crap. He's still got it. It's not like he's 50. George Foreman won the heavyweight title at 50 or something like that. I mean, but Floyd's still 40. He's young. He keeps himself in great shape. I mean, you can't expect much but a one-sided fight. Maybe the first few rounds be a little bit interesting, but after that fourth, fifth round, Conor has the body type where he's fast, but he dies.
So with that in mind, would you say that if Conor does make it the whole duration of the fight, is that a win in your eyes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if he makes it the whole fight, that looks terrible on Mayweather. That looks really bad. Someone who's never had a pro boxing fight, come on, man. You need to take care of business. You need to let your hands go, and you need to, especially in the later rounds, you need to finish him. If you have a guy who's never boxed a pro fight in his life come in there and last 12 rounds with you, that would be atrocious. That'd be embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is a win-win for Conor either way because
he's going to get paid too.
Exactly, and nobody really expects him to win here. So if he actually just goes out there and makes it reasonably kind of competitive, or as you said, Brian, takes it to the end of the fight and actually lasts and doesn't get knocked out, that's just going to make him look even better. Because again, no one really expects him to win this fight. He's a huge underdog.
Though he's gaining.
I know, that is changing
in
Vegas.
And the two best things are the money is going to be outrageous. And two, you have no pressure. There's no pressure at all. You don't have to worry about getting cut. You don't have to worry about anything. You have so much money after this fight. All you have to worry about is not kicking them in the teeth and losing their purse money. That's all you got to worry about.
Jordan, I have to ask this. With where you are in your career, what do you view of the Contender Series that Dana White's putting on Tuesdays? Do you think this is a good thing for prospects, or do you think it's better to work your way up through different promotions to get that look?
Well, I'm a little biased because I had to work my way up through the regional circuit and everything. And it's interesting. Most of these guys that you see on the Contender Series, they have some kind of affiliation with a big gym, a big school. And it's not that I can tell many of these local guys, I wonder if I would even make it on the Contender Series if I wasn't signed to the UFC, because I'm not coming from an alpha male or a AKA or something like that. So I like the idea of it, but I just want to see more diverse groups of people coming there so that it's not just, oh, you know this guy, so let's get you on there, you know?
So almost more like a golden ticket type of thing as opposed to like guys who probably would be in the UFC regardless if they were on this Contender Series or not.
Exactly. And that's what I want to see. I want to see the people that the RFA or the LFA and Titan have that are, you know, the champs. I want to see them fight, nor just give them a contract, but if I want to see a good fight, I'm going to get the best of the best, the ones that we've seen that aren't or that might not be from these huge camps. They may be, but who have already worked their way up so high in the regional circuit that people already know them. You know, a lot of these people, I don't know them that well, and a lot of them are just coming from the big camps because they know people.
Jordan, let's talk a little bit about you and what's next for you. When would you like to fight next? That the last fight that you just had at UFC Fight Night 114 was a quick one. I'm sure you're still reasonably, you know, very healthy, where you didn't take much damage. So when would you like to get back into the cage next?
Well, I started lifting on Tuesday, so I have one day off, really, after flying in and everything. So I'm back in the gym, and I'm hoping for the Norfolk card in Virginia, which would be fantastic. It's only about 5 or 6 hours drive from my home. It's close enough for my friends to come, and it's right before Thanksgiving, so I can pig out after.
That's perfect. What would be the first thing that you'd want to pig out with at Thanksgiving? Are you kind of a turkey guy, or you want to get into the pies and cakes and all that good stuff?
Well, sweets-wise, it's definitely going to be a peach cobbler. Mm. But I want to go up to Connecticut with my Italian family and they have these, like, all these cured meats, all this dried sausage and prosciutto and all the good super bad, awful for you stuff, and just some Parmesan cheese and prosciutto, and I'm going to be a happy man.
Man, this is dangerous because I only had a slice of pizza before I came in this morning, so I'm starving right now. I'm a big mashed potato and like some butter and gravy on top of it. That's one of my main go-tos mixed with some turkey on Thanksgiving. But, oh,
yep.
I don't want to wish away the rest of the summer, but I am looking forward to that Thanksgiving meal. Oof.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
One of my favorite holidays, hands down, and my mother always does it right, so my mouth is starting to water, too, so I'll digress. But, Jordan, you're talking about maybe getting – what's that?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're talking about getting on that fight card in Virginia there. Is there a particular opponent that comes to mind? Is there someone that you'd like to fight or that maybe that you've heard rumblings might be up next for you?
No, we haven't heard anything about that yet. I mean, there's a few – people that I would love to get in the cage with, of course, but that might have bigger names. That would be great. Because I was looking at a list and trying to watch him and everything, because we need to progress slow. It's not like I'm going to start calling out Tony and Khabib right now, but at the same time, we want to take a step forward. And honestly, I was looking at a list of all the fighters at lightweight, and I was like, man, it's not like you can ask for an easy fight because none of them are easy. But one person I want in the near future, if possible, I don't want to be too rash as to say all this, but I think Ross Pearson would be a good fight for me. And there's a few others that I can't think of names-wise, but there's a couple other, but there hasn't been any talks with the UFC or Sean Shelby yet, so once we start talking about it, then we'll have a more narrowed list, hopefully.
Well, it was definitely really fun to watch you get in there and get that W your last time out, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Let's get you back on at some point here, but either before or after your next fight. It's always great having you on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and just let me know when the next time is, and we'll definitely set it up.
You got it, sir. Before we let you go, anybody you'd like to thank to help you get ready for this fight, this fight camp here?
Thank my Lord Jesus Christ. Thank the people on my team at Team Rock Charlotte, Snake, Jeremy, Wayne, and all the other people that work with me every single day. You know, Dan, my weightlifting coach. There's a lot of people that I try to thank as much as I can.
Well, that's a good way to start right there. Always starting off with your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, or mine as well, and your camp. That's always really important too. So, UFC lightweight Jordan Rinaldi, thank you for coming on. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you all for having me.
This is Brian Stackpole here from the Main Event, just giving you a friendly reminder to follow us on all the social media spheres, and also be sure to like our Facebook page as well. The Main Event is your place for mixed martial arts news, not just here in the state of Maine, not just in New England, but all throughout the nation and throughout the globe as well. We've had listeners from Africa, Europe, Asia, and even South America, not to just limit it to North America and the state of Maine. Listeners throughout the world, go to the Main Event for all their news and notes, and you should too. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Be sure to subscribe to iTunes, and while you're there at the Main Event on iTunes, give us a little like, give us some comments, rate us as well, because that helps us provide you the best MMA content from this local, regional, and national feel of things. So, the Main Event is your one-stop source, and again, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and make sure you like us on Facebook too, because we've got some big announcements coming up in the fall as well to give you even more of what you love here from the Main Event with myself, Brian Stackpole, and Ryan Jarrell.
Back at the Main Event, Ryan Jarrell and Brian Stackpole. Joining us now is a Young's MMA fighter who won his debut fight at NEF 30 in Bangor when he stopped Dustin Freeman in the second round via TKO. Roger Ewer is on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's a pleasure. So a lot to get to with you today. Big night for yourself, your debut win, and your brother capturing a belt all in the same night. It's a great family night. So try and explain just how much that night meant to you here in Bangor.
That was actually, everything came together perfectly for me. Being able to be on the card with my debut with CJ being for his first title fight. And then being in Bangor where everybody in our family and all of our friends and, you know, everybody could be there to watch it. The crowd was, it was our crowd, so that was great. It really made a difference to me.
Well, can you explain the crowd cheering when you first entered into the building and then also when you won? Because I got to say, when Fred won, when CJ, your brother, won, those were loud ones, but yours was also deafening too. Just can you go through that experience of hearing the crowd just roar and cheer for you?
That was probably the most energizing thing of this whole experience. I could see that, I had my group of people seated, and I could actually see them from the entry point. But when I walked out, and it felt to me like the whole place erupted, and that could have just been an exaggeration in my head. But it really made a difference for me walking in the cage. I felt like, I had the fans on my side, and that really made motivated me even more to perform well.
Now, you mentioned being in the cage and seeing some of the people that you knew. Was there anything that when you stepped in and actually had this matchup that was a little different than you previously had expected when you were doing your training, for instance?
Well, I guess when I talked to some of the seasoned fighters at Young's, they all described it accurately. When I walked into the cage and they locked the cage, everything went away and it just became me and my opponent. And, I went to work from there. I mean, I could hear Coach Young, yelling instructions, but anything other than that, it's just focused on the fight.
Now, Roger, again, this was your debut fight, and I don't want to misspeak. You corrected Pete in the cage afterwards. You're 42 years old?
No. I made a joke. I asked him who told him I was 44. I'm actually 22. I was just being facetious with that. Yeah. 44, yeah.
You're 44. Okay. So how long have you been training and preparing, wanting to step into the cage?
Well, I went to Young's in August of last year just to check it out on CJ's recommendation. And I liked what I saw there. That's back when it was at the YMCA location there in Bangor. And I really enjoyed it. I started off just doing the fitness classes, trying to get, in some better shape. Then started doing some of the jiu-jitsu classes with a couple of the big guys that were there, and eventually picked up some of the striking classes. So from August throughout the last year, I've been working toward being prepared for a fight. I never really had a date set in my mind of when I was going to go fight. I just wanted to be working towards that goal.
And you decide you want to get punched in the face after doing the training and everything, which I can commend you for. How long in the process, though, you said eventually you did want to get a fight inside the cage at the amateur ranks. When did that actually click in after you had started at Young's?
Probably about 6 months. My biggest struggle at Young's was the striking classes. Coming from a wrestling background, you're not really comfortable really with people throwing punches at your head and whatnot, so once I was able to start sparring a little bit and get a little more comfortable with that is when I realized that taking a fight might be a possibility for me.
And when you finally did approach Chris Young and say, hey, I want to go in there, I want to scrap, what was his initial reaction to that?
Well, it has been an ongoing conversation with us from the beginning. He wanted to know what my intentions were when I first got there, and I told him, I needed to be in much better shape and I wanted to learn some stuff. But when this whole thing with CJ and the Bangor fight came, that's when I came to him and I said, I really would like to try this out. And he said, let me see what I can find for an opponent. And it just went from there.
Now, when you say you wanted to get in much, much better shape, was that you needed to drop some weight? Did you lose a significant amount of weight? Or was it more just kind of cardio shape, getting you into a position where you'd be ready to go three full rounds and feel comfortable doing so?
Sure. Well, kind of both. They go hand in hand. I probably lost 15 or 20 pounds, from when I started at the gym, and then also the cardiovascular that's required to do that kind of, activity in that amount of time is pretty intense. So, I can cycle for, you know, a lot of miles. I've done half marathons, but to actually get into the cage and be able to, you know, pull 9 minutes of full intensity, that's a whole different level of cardiovascular training that I needed.
And what do you think is the most difficult part as far as, you know, taxing your body and, you know, the whole grind of training camp? Is it the grappling and the wrestling and the kind of rolling around, the jiu-jitsu on the ground, or was it the striking for you?
I think in general, the biggest struggle that I had as a new person to this is tension, you know, using breath control. I'm not using technique over muscles. I spend a lot of time trying to find that technique and control of my breathing, because that's what kind of burns you out the fastest, especially being a big guy. If I'm bigger than my opponent and I can use my muscles to overcome him, that's fine, but that also burns out my energy faster. So that's something that I have to get better at doing.
That's the exact same thing. When I was in the gym on a regular basis, that's exactly what I would always do. I would gas myself out because I wouldn't stay with technique. I'm like, oh, I'm bigger than this guy. I'm just going to try to, you know, out-muscle him. But that's such the truth.
Yeah. And I will say, Roger, I was extremely impressed that in that second round, because in the heavyweight ranks, a lot of times you'll see the first round will be fast and furious as both guys are going for the knockout. But when it went that first 3 minutes, the bell dings, you go into your corner and you come back out, I thought you were extremely fresh. As your opponent, though, seemed to be a little worse for wear. Do you just give that back to your training and staying within your technique?
Well, because this was my first fight, and I'm an older fighter, obviously, and I didn't know anything about my opponent. My only focus during my training was to be as conditioned as possible. That was my main focus. So I did a lot of functional training as far as trying to, like I was talking about, the breath control and stuff. So while I was fighting in the first round, I made it a point to be very much in control of my tension level and my breathing, and that helped me to maintain the ability to come into the second round feeling okay about it. And also, like, you know, Dustin spent, you know, pretty much the first round struggling underneath me, so that burns you out really fast, too. And you know, I'm not taking anything away from him. He fought hard the whole time, so that obviously would wear somebody down.
Now, your opponent, Dustin Freeman, he actually lost 145 pounds before this fight, preparing for this fight. Obviously, that was over the course of a period of time. But did you have a chance to talk to him afterwards? Because that's an impressive feat all on its own. And obviously, there's mutual respect with whoever it is that you're getting into the cage with, because it's not something easy. Did you get a chance to talk to him and afterwards and maybe shake hands and you know, discuss this whole process?
Oh, absolutely. I told him right in the cage that was a great fight. I bumped into him again in the medical room and just told him, hey, you know, you're a fighter. You never gave up. I told him congratulations on the weight loss. And, you know, he's a young man. He's got some time ahead of him. I told him to keep up the good work. I think, you know, he's got to develop some more technique like we all do in the beginning and go from there. But I think, he had a lot going for him. He just, like the rest of us, we just got to learn as we go.
And speaking of young men, we're talking with one right now in Roger Ewer. I do want to talk about your brother a little bit here as well, the younger brother of yourself. First of all, how do you feel about the nickname Albino Rhino? Because I was unaware of it. I asked CJ about it after the fights, and I love the T-shirt designs, but how do you feel about it?
Oh, it cracks me up. I think, if I understand it correctly, it came from his neighborhood that he lives in. I guess it kind of fits. He's kind of a, you know, he's kind of a pale skinned fellow, and he's got the, you know, he's got the physique to carry the name. So if it works for him, I'm happy for him.
Now, all the young MMA fighters seem to have nicknames brewing. I know we're trying to work on the Wolfman with Fred and whatnot. Do you have anything down the pipeline for a nickname here in the future as you continue your MMA career?
No, I haven't. I mean, there's some jokes going around the gym, but nothing that suits me well, I don't think.
Now, speaking of your MMA career, do you want to have a second fight? And if you do, how soon do you want to get back in the cage?
Yes, I would take a second fight. I would get into the cage anytime that, you know, Chris thinks I'm ready or Chris finds an opponent. I pretty much put all my, you know, MMA fate into him. You know, he's the coach. He knows what's going on. He's the expert. So, you know, if he calls me up and says, I got a fight in a couple, 3-4 weeks, you know, or if he says, let's wait till February, I'm going to continue to train at the gym. But, you know, that's part of the reason that I'm doing this anyway, is because I enjoy learning the sport and improving. So the whole time I'm improving, you know, my next fight comes, hopefully I'll look better than the first fight.
Now, Roger, you know, this is your first fight here, so you have a career, something that you do Monday through Friday or whatever your schedule is. What is it that you do, and how much time does that allow you to get into the gym for training?
Well, I just graduated pharmacy school in May, and I'm in the process of getting my licensing done, so that's what I've been working on in and around training for the fight. The scheduling, I don't know, because once I become a licensed pharmacist, I'll have to see what my schedule looks like. But there's a lot of stuff I can do, I won't say on my own, but there's a lot of conditioning stuff that I can take care of outside of the gym, so I just need to get into the gym for the technique stuff. And then when a fight comes in, I'll, of course, look at that and try to... Chris is pretty flexible with... If he's going to train his fighters, he'll find a way to make it work.
I just thought of your nickname. I think I've devised it. Roger the pharmacist Ewer, he's giving out the prescriptions to pain. How about that?
Yeah, somebody came up with something very similar to that. I was planning on keeping the two kind of separate.
All right, well, if you change your mind, let us know. We can come up with some good cartoon designs. I think we can put a little code on you. Just keep that in mind.
Roger, talk a little bit about Chris Young. He's kind of like the unheralded hero of Young's MMA. Fred Lear in Cage, after he won the belt, you know, talked about how amazing of a man he is and what he does for all of the fighters there. How phenomenal of a guy is he, and what has his coaching style been like for you in preparation for your debut fight here?
Well, of course, Chris, you know, I can't say enough about him. He is dedicated. He's a man who's dedicated to the sport for the sake of the sport. You know, I think Fred said it during his post-fight, but, you know, Chris is there to open the gym. He's there to close the gym. You know, he's taking care of the mats. He's on the phone planning fights and negotiating and matchmaking and dealing with some of the younger fighters, I'm sure, you know, is a challenge. You know, there's a certain, you know, maturity level that comes with age, and you know they're doing one thing and he's trying to direct them in a different way, so that itself is another thing that he seems to be pretty good at. You know, he's not overbearing, he's not, you know, saying you will do this, you will do that, and I think for me that style works because he's, you know, he's going to lead you in a direction and it's going to be up to you to follow, and he's not going to be there every day to force you to do it. You know, you got to put the effort in, and I think that's why I really enjoyed working with him. I wanted to put the effort in, and that made it easy for me. He didn't have to babysit me, I guess, so that made it easy for both of us.
Yeah, nothing but respect from both Ryan and myself here for Chris Young. He's done some great things at Young's MMA and also for the mixed martial arts world up in the Northeast in general. So I know you fought in the middle of the card here, Roger. At what point were you able to go and watch the fights, or did you have to sit in the back and watch the remaining parts of it?
No, left the cage, you go through a medical checkup, and for me it was fairly quick. They cut off the wraps of your gloves. I just did a quick change up, and I was able to go out. I think that I saw all the rest of the fight, so I saw Fred's fight, I saw Ryan's fight, and CJ's fight.
Let's just go through CJ's fight and just the experience that you went in and felt in your head too, seeing your brother fight and trying to get a Ewer doubleheader sweep in that contest, in that bout.
Well, that was part of the pressure for me, going in there as a new fighter and carrying, first of all, the last name, you know, your name, which CJ has done a great job of building up, and then also carrying the Young's name, which, you know, Chris Young isn't going to put you into the cage to represent unless he thinks you're ready. And so when CJ went out there, you know, Mike Hansen is a tough opponent. You know, he'll fight anybody anywhere, so I was a little bit nervous. He's a bigger guy than CJ, but CJ handled it well. I've been working with him, being able to be his workout partner, and he's done it. I've seen him improve his striking a lot over the last 8 weeks, and of course his wrestling, you can't even compete with that. So, you know, when he won with that triangle choke, I wasn't surprised, but I was really happy that it went that quick and it ended that way.
What do you think the ceiling is for CJ? How good can he be?
The only struggle that anybody like CJ has is, you know, he can't dedicate himself 100% to the fight world. He's got a family, he's got a career. So that's the ceiling. I don't know, you know, competition-wise or where, but, you know, it's hard when you, you know, he's got the four girls at home and his wife, and, he's a military man that could get called up any time. So those are the obstacles or the challenges that he faces that would keep him from going, you know, up and up and up.
Well, he clearly has the ability to go up and up. I got to ask you this, too, because you're the perfect person to ask this to, because you're his brother. Tell me, am I crazy, or does he kind of resemble a little bit of George St. Pierre and, like, Drago from Rocky?
Yeah. George St. Pierre actually is one of my favorite fighters to watch, and I think a lot of it is because watching CJ reminds me of him a lot. And, you know, CJ's technique, and not even just his technique, but his attitude. One of the reasons I love George St. Pierre is because he's in that MMA world where everybody wants a trash talker, but he's still a respectful sportsman. And, you know, I see the same with CJ and all the young people, really. And, you know, that matters to me, and I think it's important for the sport.
Do you have any stories about growing up and maybe beating up on CJ, or just something unique that you have from childhood?
No, you know, CJ and I are separated by, I think, 7 or 8 years. So there was never really any of that, but I do, you know, I think somebody mentioned it before. He started wrestling, I think, in third grade or something. He would follow us to the older brothers who wrestled, and he'd come out on the mat. You know, he was always sort of the mascot, more or less, of the team, and then he grew into, to really, outshine all of us and go on and do some college wrestling, and now he's, building a name in MMA. So, yeah, I'm proud of him. He's done a great job.
Now, Roger, I know you're going to try to take the advice of Chris Young and go on your career and his advice and whatnot, but if you could have an envisionment of the perfect career in mixed martial arts for you, what would it be?
I guess my perfect career would simply be continue to grow in the amateur heavyweight, I guess, and maybe eventually at the end of, of a year or two or three fights, maybe having a chance, depending on how I do. At going for the amateur belt, but I know I'm new, and that first fight looked good for me, but I've watched that tape over and over and over, and there's a lot of stuff that I need to improve on or fine tune, like Chris says. So, well, I think over the course of the year, I'd like to have a few more fights, and then maybe, if I'm worthy, if I continue to do well, I wouldn't mind being an amateur belt again.
Bringing another belt back to the Champions Factory of Young's MMA. Well, Roger, it was definitely a lot of fun watching you make your debut, and we look forward to seeing you back in the cage, and thank you again for coming on the show today. We'll do it again at some point.
Thank you very much for having me, guys.
The main event is sponsored by Sea Dog Brewing Company. The Sea Dog is located on 26 Front Street on the Penobscot River here in Bangor. You can call them at 947-8009, or you can find them at seadogbrewing.com. A couple of new exciting beers you need to go check out at the Sea Dog. They have a new Sea Dog Pale Ale that is just delicious, and also a Deep Stowage IPA that is very popular and bringing a lot of people down to the Sea Dog to try these new two beers. While you're down there, you might as well check out another exciting event that the Sea Dog is going to be hosting. As always, they are going to have their second annual Sunfish Festival that is Saturday, August 19th from 12 p.m. all the way till 10 p.m. at night. And they have a few exciting acts for you. Hambone is going to be performing from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. DJ MC will be there from 4 to 7, and the Ultra Boys will be coming on at 9:30 p.m. to close out the night. All this is going to be happening at 26 Front Street in Bangor. The Sea Dog is where it's at. Make sure you go check it out. Sea Dog.
Now, Ryan, are you a big Fall Out Boy fan?
Not particularly.
No?
No, are you?
See, I think they got better. This was the first breakout song for them. I actually watched them in here in Bangor a couple years ago, and they were not bad. I kind of crapped on them a little bit back when they were starting to become a little bit more emo, or at least a little bit more popular. But you know what? I'll give them credit. if I never hear the fire song or the memory song again because it's used constantly in sports, I'll be happy. But yeah. Sometimes it's nice to be nostalgic because this song reminds me of my junior year of high school.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, when I do hear a song from a while ago, it's just like, actually, funny enough, yesterday I was listening to the radio and a song from American Pie came on.
Yeah.
And it brought me right back and I was like, whoa. And it was very nostalgic. It was kind of cool.
It's kind of like Voodoo Child with you back in your high school days, right? Or are you talking about Iran from A Flock of Seagulls? That was around when you graduated, right?
Voodoo Child. Oh, man. No, when I graduated, I'm trying to think what was big. I can't even remember, yeah. Man. Yeah, I mean, there was when I was in high school, a lot of, you know, hip hop was like the thing,
yeah,
you know.
Time.
So that was that's what I kind of.
And American Pie had some really good cuts. It was more. I'm trying to think of the rock style, but it was almost like that. You just know it's 90s
right,
rock,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. And no, I loved it. That was I love that series. When that first movie came out, you know, and you were around that age, everyone related to it in one way or another. There was always certain characters that, you know, you felt like reminded you of, you know, like I would have loved to have played Stifler. That would have been a freaking riot. But he was, you know, a little too out there for me, my personality.
You think so?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think I'm that, you know, kind of crazy. He has a friend that he reminds me of, which is really funny. Yeah. So anytime I see him, you know, they don't look like one another, but their personalities are very similar.
It's always interesting, though, watching people play high schoolers when you know they're like in their mid-20s, though.
I know.
It's
right?
Very, very weird when you find that fact out. But eventually that series jumped the shark a little bit, mm-hmm. and then they had some like spin-off ones using the American Pie name, mm-hmm. which, again, was just an excuse to put boobs in movies for adolescents, I'm pretty sure.
Thank you.
But still, I'll give them credit. They put out a pretty good series, made a ton of money.
They made a ton of money.
It's been a long week already.
Yes, it has.
And on top of that, got Jason Biggs' career and Sean William Scott. So, I mean, they were able to jumpstart their careers off of that. Oh, not just to mention, Tara Reid became famous because of that. And then she became unfamous and now is in Sharknado 18.
I know, right? Good God.
What do you think of the Sharknado movies, by the way?
Not much.
No, me either. Though I want to find, we got to look this up. We got to find an MMA fighter that has the nickname of Sharknado. If not, we are going to make one of them Sharknado.
Sharknado? Well, geez.
That's a pretty cool one.
How could that be made into an MMA nickname? They'd have to be like maybe like a surfer or something like that.
Or have like a name, maybe like a Russian name where it's got like some arcs. Like you've heard of Kashakian and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Can we maybe we can get something like that name and maybe we can make it and call him Sharknado.
Alfred Sharknado Kashakian.
Yeah, that kind of sounds cool. Imagine the possibilities. He's going to do a lot of spinning backfists, though.
Right, spinning backfists and just wild stuff that you wouldn't expect from a shark that comes flying at you through the air.
Right, and do the Jacare kind of
how terrifying
thing.
Would that be, though? You know, I mean, think about anything that's scary, more scary than a shark flying at you, coming to get you.
A Sharknado, you know, I mean? That's scary.
Yeah, that is terrifying.
Sharks are scary enough. Yeah. Tornadoes are scary. Mix
them
together.
Terrifying.
That's why there's like 8 episodes or movies of Sharknado in the series.
Good Lord.
I digress. So let's talk a little bit about CES down last night, actually, in Rhode Island, rather, in Lincoln. Yeah. Bruce Boynton, who we interviewed for our last episode, unfortunately lost, but hey, made it to the second round and faced a difficult opponent in the Snake, Nate Andrews, and just a tough one for Bruce, but I'm sure this is just a momentary setback before he gets back on the win streak again.
Yeah, I mean, Nate is a tough guy. He's 11-1 now, and he just keeps on winning, and he keeps on winning impressively. Bruce got out of the first round, which is better than most of the opponents that Nate has faced, and we had our photographer, Ed Trocianic, down there last night, so shout out to him. He took some wonderful pictures that we'll be posting here shortly, but, you know, that's just one of those things where, you know, you go in against a guy that's difficult matchup stylistically. That's what Nate Andrews is, and Bruce unfortunately didn't get the job done for himself and his Young's team. But you know he'll be back. He still wants to do this. So this is just another bump in the road for him. And he always has a good mindset. So he'll be back in camp, and you know be exciting to see who he faces up against next.
Then we saw Gonzalez Almeida. I thought was pretty good. I didn't get to watch it live, but I saw some of the clips afterwards. And man, Gonzalez is really impressive. Those leg kicks were just phenomenal. Where it buckled Almeida a couple of times, and he won pretty decisively by way of a decision. I would say if you combine all the scorecards, he won 49-46 because he won a 50-45, he won a 48-47, I think, or something like that. But if you extrapolated it all out, it was a 49-46 victory, and he looks very good, and now the new, I think, featherweight champion, right?
Yeah, and Matt Bissett is not happy about it. I don't know if you saw a post that he made recently, but he basically said that, you know, it's a bunch of BS that he's been a defending champion, and, you know, he's been finishing his championship fights, never lost the belt, and just because he has an injury, he's going to be shelved for a little while. They make an interim champion. Yeah. He's not happy about it, and I can understand why.
Yeah, but I can't wait to see that battle.
That will be good. Hopefully, it's going to be coming soon. And I'll tell you what, Gonzalez, he's going to have his work cut out for him, because although he's a big prospect and a bright future, you got an angry mangler coming back, because he came off, you know, obviously that loss at the Tuesday night contender series to Hollibaugh, but he got injured to boot. And, you know, now when he comes back, he's going to be ticked. He's going to be scary.
Hopefully, that's not the end of his chances with the UFC, and I don't think it will be.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah, we shall see with the mangler. And then Catino won the strap in the title match, too, in the main event. So congratulations to him. He's now the new CES champion in that main event. So a pretty nice night of fights. Nick Alley lost, unfortunately. But all things considered, it looked like it was a good time down in Rhode Island.
Yeah, wish we could have been. We got to get down to the next one. You know, they're always very warm and welcoming. Anytime I've reached out and asked for press passes, absolutely 100%. So we got to get down to one of those cards very, very soon.
And speaking of MMA cards, if you're looking for something to watch tonight, our friends at Flow Combat are going to have Cage Titans 35 available for you to watch. And we've got a couple of friends on the show that are going to be participating, including Manny Bermudez will be fighting in the co-main event as well. And I was looking back through here. Joe Giannetti will also be having a scrap at 155 against Keenan Raymond. And we talked with him before about his potential matchup with Conor Berry that got scrapped, of course. But again, looking forward to seeing what those two athletes can do and everyone else fighting on the rest of the card, because it should be a nice one tonight.
Absolutely. And again, with all the great promotions that are around here in New England, it's nice to have some shows to talk about and some fights to watch. In between the NEF events. So it just gives us more material to dive into.
Yep, and the UFC will be having UFC 215 soon. I almost said 16. It seems like it's been a little while since we've had a big-time fight night, isn't it? I know we've got Struve coming up on the 2nd, and then 215's coming up here. But other than that, it's basically wait for Conor McGregor and Floyd to see how that all shakes out.
How exciting.
You feeling good for Conor?
You know, I am. I after seeing the Malignaggi video, it gives me even more confidence than I already had. And
you want to make a bet on this now?
Well, what are my odds, Brian? What are we betting?
Oh, we're not going to do odds. We'll just do flat.
Oh, just flat, straight. Yeah, flat. Yeah, so okay. You know,
you want to put your title on the line?
My title on the line.
Yeah, you can put your title on the line. We'll just pick one fight. It'll be Conor versus Floyd. You can put your title on the line.
Yeah, okay. Let me think about it. We still got 2 weeks.
All right, next week we'll try it again, see if maybe you want to put your belt where your mouth is.
All right.
We'll see.
Yeah, we need to have a big Conor Mayweather show breakdown.
Yes.
You know,
we'll do that here very soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have Pete Zimbor, who you know from the New England Fights promotion there, in Cage announcer, and he's a boxing connoisseur, so he knows that sport inside and out. So we're going to have, for me, being a McGregor guy, I'm going to have to come with some material, because he's going to be really on that Mayweather hype train, trying to shut my Conor backing down.
So. We'll also hear from James Buster Douglas for a couple of minutes or so. Yeah. We were able to ask him back at the NEF event in Lewiston a couple months ago about that very instance, so we'll be able to play a little bit of that audio for you and just hear what the former heavyweight champion thinks about that one as well. But
very cool.
It's been a great show once again. I want to thank all our guests here again today and look forward to another episode.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan Rinaldi, and thank you, Roger Ewer. We look forward to bringing our next installment of the main event, episode 71, which is going to feature Carl Roberson, the newest member, or one of the newest members of the UFC after his impressive knockout at Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. And we're also going to have the NEF amateur lightweight champion, Pat Kelly. So make sure to look out for that episode coming to you next week.
And until that time, for Ryan Jarrell and Brian Snackbowl saying, peace. We'll see you next time.